28 seconds after the hour of 11, and it's the month of November, the year of our Lord, 2006. Thank you for coming along and making it part of your listening day. This is the Rick Emerson radio program. I am he. We are here emanating from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of AM 970, Solid State Radio, and this is in my inbox right now. Subject line, and I won't say who this is from, the subject line is a friend of mine. The subject line is, I am sitting next to Iggy Pop. I got this about 20 minutes ago. Rick, I swear to you, I'm in a Starbucks in a rich neighborhood in Seattle, and Iggy Pop is here with a dead-looking whore wearing a boa. No,
Is Iggy wearing it or the dead-looking whore?
See, that's what I'm saying. I'm unclear about who's wearing the boa in this story. Maybe they're sharing the boa, sort of. I was going to make a joke about Velvet Goldmine style, whatever. No one has noticed him. Which seems unlikely, because if he's Iggy Pop, there was some sort of federal mandate passed years ago that Iggy Pop can't go out of the house with his shirt on. No matter where he goes, and the guy's like 75. And everywhere he goes, well, I better take my shirt off now and smear myself with peanut butter. What's that?
That's when it gets a bit creepy, is when they're about 75.
It's like clothing actually actively offends him. You know what I mean? I guess it makes it work because he's still in shape and whatnot. But Iggy Pop doesn't really look like a human anymore. He sort of looks like a skeleton that's had skin's kind of sort of sewn onto it. You know what I mean?
Skeleton hanging onto a bar.
Someone hands him a shirt and he throws it down in distaste and stomps out of the room.
This clothing horrifies me.
I think at this point, the listeners are wondering why Sarah sounds so different.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Tim Riley. Mm-hmm. We'll do a round of introductions here in a moment. I swear to you, I'm sitting in a rich neighborhood in a Starbucks in Seattle. Iggy Pop is here with a dead-looking whore wearing a boa. No one has noticed him. He is seated across from me reading the Seattle Times, this email says. I am going to talk to him now. All right, fantastic. All right, we'll update you on that later on. Greetings, salutations, hello, thank you for coming by. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-733-2970. It is Wednesday, and welcome to day 12. 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. You can also email if you like. It is Rick at RickEmerson.com. RickEmerson.com, should you choose to engage with us in binary fashion today. So, yeah, I should make the introduction that we are joined today by Kristen Bowie, who is ably filling in for Sarah X. Dillon, who I believe at this moment is heading towards the airport. And we're going to hear from her later on. She called me about half an hour or so ago. And the best part about Sarah going to the airport today is because she's flying on I guess today is the day before Thanksgiving. She's going to Wisconsin. With her boyfriend, Nate, where she's going to be sleeping in an unheated farmhouse. So she's got that working for us. But as she left the studio yesterday, and we'll talk more about this later when she calls in, she left the studio and she'd actually gone to whatever that website, the FAA.gov or whatever it is. We had this whole long discussion yesterday in the program about whether... Now, I'm not saying that Sarah has any sort of a problem. See, wouldn't... It's not my place to make such observations. I'm simply saying that I believe to even the casual observer yesterday, it became, as the British would say, patently obvious that the idea of flying from here to Wisconsin without the aid of some sort of alcoholic beverage or five it was horrifying in the extreme to her. So we spent the better part of yesterday's program in for it. I'm not advocating that you flout any sort of airport security laws or that you violate any sort of directive from a government official. That clearly is a thing you shouldn't do. The government is here to help you, and as such, they are to be obeyed and respected and feared and cowered before at all times. But she did print out from FAA.gov. She found some page on their website wherein you could read it and make the sort of inference. It could be interpreted to say that bringing a bag full of mini bottles of vodka on the plane was legal so long as the seal was not cracked on those. And it's like it really is like she just won the Irish lottery. That you have never seen her eyes get, it's like she looked like a Keen painting. Her eyes suddenly got all wide and she
like
walked out.
Early Christmas.
Seriously. She walked out with a dip in her hip and a spring in her step. And so she's going to the airport today, and she's actually got that page from FAA.gov literally in her back pocket.
I was going to say, she should bring it.
Although, if they give her any guff, she's going to get all up in their face about it. So we'll find out later on. We'll ask the magical question, can Sarah Dillon smuggle alcohol onto a federally governed airline? What is the worst sound in the entire world? and so forth. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show. If you can drop this bed just a little bit. Let's welcome now to the Rick
Help
Emerson
me.
Radio program.
Like you did by the lake on Naboo.
No! In his exciting new role as half stenographer of the Rick Emerson Show, our good friend Aaron Geek in the City, Duran. Hello, sir.
Greetings, program.
How are you, my friend?
I'm doing good.
Let me ask you
last day of work this week.
Well, see, I'm unclear about what it is that you do.
I work for a large company downtown.
And now, is this, do you...
In what capacity?
I'm a cubicle zombie. I process paperwork all day long. It's a meaningless, pointless job that a trained monkey could do.
Okay, there you go. At least you're not bitter about it, though. That's
no,
the important
not at all.
The important thing is to keep it. Always keep on the sunny side of life, my friend.
Yeah. Are you surrounded by coworkers who just heard that remark?
Yeah.
No, of course not. I'm in the lobby.
Oh. All right. See, you
got to the security guard.
Do they think you're in the bathroom or something at the moment?
They think I'm heading out of the mail room.
Fantastic. All right. Because you've had, I mean, just in the few years that I've known you, you've had, by my count, about 19 different jobs. There was that time that you were working for the city, and then you were working for like some auto group or like an auto insurance company or something.
We don't speak of those dark times.
And now you're doing something. Can you drop that bed just a little bit? I'm having I'm getting this kind of a throbbing sensation in my head from that.
I'm sorry.
No, it's not your fault. No, it's not.
That's because you're talking to me, buddy.
No, I'm just saying it's one of those days where everything is a little spikier inside my ears than it really ought to be, ideally. So
I can't hear it.
Did someone stick a sitting opposite eel inside you?
No. And really, whether or not you can hear anything,
that's
not really a benchmark of anything.
As long as Tim's happy.
Well, Tim is happy because Tim sort of lives in Townsend land, where everything in Tim's head is just sort of accompanied by a... There's sort of like a 60-cycle hum that just vibrates along in the background.
So when he just nods his head at me, it means he really doesn't have any idea what I just said.
No, you really sound like one of the adults in a Peanuts cartoon at any given time when you're talking to him. Well, I don't know who it is. Now, it's somebody in here. And I'm not saying it's you, but if there is somebody, Sarah will come in the morning sometimes, and she will, everybody in radio knows what I'm talking about. If you work in a recording studio, you know the same thing. Everybody has had this happen to them. You walk into the studio. Do you ever do this? Here's what it's analogous to. I say, putting the analogy before the actual thing. Here's what it's like. Do you ever do this? You're driving along in your car. You got the steering wheel, and you're adjusting the radio, and you're driving along, and you're going through the stoplight, and you're navigating the stoplight, and you're going down the traffic, and you're trying to merge into the left-hand lane. And there's a guy in front of you, and he's cutting you off, and you're going to the right-hand lane, and then you're fishing around the glove compartment for your cheese, whiz or whatever it is.
Yeah,
you're
that
driving
happens
along.
All the time.
You're going to the mall. You pull into the mall. You're trying to find a space. You're circling around like a shark. You finally find a space. You duck in. You have to cut off an old lady. You put the car in park. You have to anally retent to check the parking brake like 15 times. You get out. You turn off the radio. You grab your keys. You go to the mall. You come back out. You go in the mall. You walk around. You come back out. You get in the car. You turn. And then the lady comes out at like maximum volume because you forgot to turn it down before you got out of the car. That's what it is. In this whole long series of machinations, you turn off the car, you go into the mall, you come back out, you turn on the car, and suddenly air supply is coming out of the speakers at like 300 decibels because you forgot to turn the radio down.
I promise you, I don't do that to the board.
Okay. But people do, and Tim knows exactly what I'm talking about, too. If you work in radio, you're walking into the studio, and you have your coffee cup, and you have your legal patch, and you have your newspapers, and your show prep, and you've got your big bag of cocaine, and you've got whatever, and you're walking in, and you're getting ready for an exciting 6 hours of playing Bachman Turner Overdrive records, and you sit down at the control board, you plug in your headphones, and I swear to God, it's like you've just plugged them into a jet engine that is blasting directly into the cilia of your ears. There is always one guy at the radio station that leaves the volume knob all the way up. This is the same guy, and I'm not pointing any fingers, but it usually is someone who works in production. This is the same guy that in all of the studios will leave the monitor speakers turned all the way up.
Oh.
And there's nothing playing sometimes in this production room. And so the production room is like a room where you go, it's like a little recording studio. You go to do your commercials. The monitor will be all the way up, but there's nothing playing, so you don't quite realize it. And then you'll put in that production sound effect CD, and suddenly like the 1992 laser type sound effects are coming out of the speaker at deafening levels. So there's
That's
somebody
when you just drop and cover your head and be like, where are they coming from?
No, and everybody's done that too, where it's like you're throwing the headphones off your head as though they're covered in fire ants. So, in any event...
Dude, how do you think I feel? I record shows with Clyde Lewis.
I heard, by the way, and I don't know, we may try to get to it today. Today's Wednesday. We may try to get to some of the audio You sent me, and I mentioned this a little bit yesterday, you sent me some of the audio cuts.
Yes.
The ones that were that could be edited and made radio friendly. Some of the audio cuts from your drunken Star Trek II Wrath of Khan commentary, including the one that's it's the drunken phone call to Sarah Dillon. So we might play some of those later on today. All right. Well, here's what we got.
All right.
Yeah, today we will find out whether Sarah is able to get all of her illicit hooch onto the airlines. We will answer the magical question, what is the very worst sound in the entire world? What happens when you walk into a propeller blade? And we'll find out what Jim Rupa had to suffer through at the American Music Awards last night, where I believe Britney Spears was present. I didn't see it.
She was.
Really? Was she there?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't watch it.
I just read it.
That's quite, yeah. And Rupa is totally right. When it is, the AMAs are sort of the Hydrox cookie of award shows. Like, you just sort of know that they're there, but you only really the only people who watch the American Music Awards are A, people nominated, B, people presenting, C, Jim Roop, and D, people who are like limbless in striker beds inside rehabilitation centers at hospitals who can't quite get the stick in their teeth over to the remote control to change the channel. That's it. So, and not me. So we'll talk about Britney Spears. We'll speak to Ed McCarthy and find out if there's any violence or discord or other kinds of entropy breaking out at the airports all over the country today. And that's it, man. Well, I mean, there's other stuff, but there's no point in mentioning it.
All right, so you're going to promise that we're going to try to boo the head with Sarah.
Yes.
The worst sound ever.
Yes.
Roop in L.A., Britney Spears, Ed McCarthy, and the hilarity that ensues when you walk into a propeller blade.
That is Raiders of the Lost Ark style. That is true. All right, there you go.
Best way to chop up a German.
All right, man. for all your Nazi chopping needs.
Right.
And then are we going to be speaking to you tomorrow? Because I know we got Chris coming up at the end of today. What is going on at Casa de Geek tomorrow?
I can call in tomorrow, but aren't I coming in with the burger cake?
I don't know. Are you?
I have to, otherwise you'll be eating raw burger cake.
Oh, that's...
Clyde doesn't have a way to cook it.
What do you mean Clyde doesn't have a way to cook it?
Well, what is he's living in a convection oven.
Is he just living under a bridge? Does he not have an oven at his house?
I don't think so. I think Clyde just lives on a microwave. Microwave and 7-Eleven Tostitos.
All right. Well, there you go. He's just got the microwave and that little like Snoopy snow cone maker, and that's it. That's how he gets through there. That's how he gets through the long cold winters.
He's got an easy bake oven to reheat hot pockets.
Seriously. All right. Okay. So tomorrow, well, we should talk about this just a bit right here. So tomorrow, Clive is going to be coming here with the burger cake. Now, is this regular? You don't know about burger cake, Kristen.
I don't.
Hold the phone for just a second here. Don't go anywhere. We should do a little introduction here. Tim mentioned this. We are joined today by Kristen Bowie, who is filling in for Sarah X. Dillon, who is going to be in Wisconsin today, tomorrow, and Friday. So many of you remember Kristen for the last time she was on this program, which is a stint of glory, which will be replicated today, no doubt.
I am very excited.
No pressure.
I couldn't believe you actually asked me back.
No stress. No, don't you worry.
We feel bad because you have these menial disc jockey jobs.
Oh.
But we'll give you some liner cards to read later on to make it.
I know. I feel like I should have stretched out my jaw before I started talking. I actually have more than 10 seconds.
repeat after me. It's the music that makes you feel good.
How about this? How about it's the station everybody at work can agree on?
Oh.
How about this? Say this one. Say, we're the station that picks you up and makes you feel good with no rap or heavy metal.
That's just
the
depressing.
Best part is like the sort of quasi like scolding tone that the invariably white middle aged woman in those commercials always gets. Like she sort of wrinkles up her nose a little bit, like it's with no, you know, with
like a tisk tisk moment.
It's sort of a these darn kids in their crazy hip hop. And she just sort of like an ever so lightly like you know like if you keep it up you're gonna get a serious scolding. All right, Tim Riley's working on the following stories for your edification today.
One of the Bush twins is robbed in Argentina. Rumor has it, it's the hot one. A White House staffer is robbed and beaten in a wacky key nightclub. Old President Bush defends young President Bush. And O.J. says the book was not a confession.
By the way, I should note that those O.J. books, the few that have already made it onto eBay, were going for $3,000 last
night.
You're
kidding. No. That's more than what a PS3 is going for right now.
Seriously. and the really sad thing is that they're vanishing before I can bid. That's really the damn of the misery of it. It's like I'll see the bid, and I'll go to click, like, you know, place bid now, and then they're gone. So,
you know, just a testament to how nasty our country is.
See, what is it about that chair that makes people so morally self-righteous? What is it about...
I would read it. It's just that I'm a dirty American.
So. Well, see, that's the thing is, I don't have any shame. I have no embarrassment about it at all. I have no problem admitting it.
I'm not embarrassed. I'm just honest.
All right.
So you'd be a little more positive if you sat on the Tina Yonder's chair.
The Tina Yonder's celebrity stool.
Mm-hmm. That screams optimism.
It does. I feel it running through my veins.
I feel the celebrity stool running through my veins.
Oh, no.
That's like that. It reminds me of that Marlon Brando story. Moving on.
So, anywho, so there you go. So that's what we got. And then, so tomorrow for Thanksgiving. So, Clyde, is this regular burger cake that Clyde is bringing in, or is it turkey burger cake?
We're going shopping tonight. I think we're going to make turkey burger cake.
All right. So this...
You just have to find a way to infuse the gravy without it oozing into it.
Repulsive.
It really is fantastic. Well, this
some
is...
people.
See, look, here's the thing about burger cake. Now, people laugh, but Clyde has come up with a lot of these ideas over the years. And usually while he's stoned and at my house, and people don't really appreciate them. They sound like silly ideas until they come to fruition, and then you realize the sort of weird genius behind them. The thing
Like Mug of Pizza.
Mug of Pizza is a brilliant... And now this is coming from a man. I have had Mug of Pizza on several occasions. If I had money to invest right now... You know what Mug of Pizza is like? Mug of Pizza is like in The Jerk. It's that the opti-grab thing that the guy puts in the middle of Steve Martin's glasses. That's what Mug of Pizza is. It seems like a retarded idea until you actually use it, until you experience the product, and then you realize it's a stroke of absolute pure distilled genius. It is just like it sounds. It's a big mug filled with pizza. I'm not really doing a good job of selling it, but you just have to trust me when I say that it's fantastic.
Like, is it a regular pizza put into a mug, or is it pizza made in a mug?
Now, here's the deal.
No, you have to line the mug with dough, and then you layer it and bake it.
That's exactly what it is. You fill the mug, you layer the inside. Imagine that the mug is a pie pan.
So it's like a pizza quiche.
I suppose one could argue that, but it's like a mug-shaped mini pizza inside the mug.
Okay.
It's fantastic. So he then followed that up with the bouquet of bacon, which is a great... And that's... See, and you say bouquet of bacon, and people roll their eyes, but I'm telling you right now, if you know if you know a guy in your life right now, picture the guy that... I mean, if you're a woman, picture the guy that maybe shares your bed, shares your home, the guy with whom you spend intimate moments. Imagine the look on that guy's face if he opens the door, and there's some... somebody like, congratulations, hello, sir. This bouquet of bacon is for you. And then it comes with like a little card. And then like,
I know many men who would be happy with that.
You know, yeah. And then like,
I'd rather have that bottomless mug of pizza.
So anyway.
The lovely Jen has woken me up with a bouquet of bacon before.
Are you speaking in code about something?
I always fantasize
about you waking me up with the bouquet of bacon. Is that like being woken up by cursing Aunt Jemima?
I dipped it in Aunt Jemima later.
Okay. So Clyde created this burger cake thing that I think we're going to be... So I guess you'll be cooking it at your house, and then we'll be heating it here tomorrow. Because this is sort of a Thanksgiving tradition we have, where we sort of manufacture food during the first few hours of the show, and then we sort of serve it during the final hour of the show. And so the burger cake, and I don't want to give it all away beforehand. I've seen a picture of it, though, where it is just a large cake-shaped hamburger patty with then massive buns cooked to encase it in. And I mean, it really is just half burger, half cake. I mean, it's
gravy.
It is infused, right? Is that the thing?
Well, this time we're going to see if we can infuse the bun with gravy.
There you go.
Or maybe we might like deep fry frosting, you know, the stuffing, and give it a crusty edge, just make that the bun. We'll see.
Okay.
Yeah, fine with it.
I just imagine someone like injecting gravy into the bun. Mm. Ugh.
Yeah, well,
I can imagine it too. I mean,
with longing. All right. So and then we'll bring in corn.
That makes me feel better.
Our want. Well, we've moved beyond.
Well, usually I bring in things, but I end up tearfully bringing them home because nobody touches it.
Well, it's always
and sitting alone on the train on the way home, eating with nobody caring to touch. Every Thanksgiving, it's been going on for many years here. It is a tradition on the program. Whatever I bring in, nobody likes.
I don't know that that's true.
I know that that's
a fact. We're similar people, Tim.
I always bring my own utensils so I can eat it on the way home. Because it would spoil on the long ride.
Sitting there like the saddest of all clowns.
I'm the only person on the bus or train on the way home on Thanksgiving Day.
Well, what is it you typically bring? It's not like something made out of seaweed or something.
You think it would be, wouldn't it?
What is it you plan?
Let's see.
What is it you brought in the past?
I have brought ice cream, but vegan ice cream.
Twice.
All is right. that the After rice I... cream stuff?
Yes.
I know that. Fantastic.
See? Right. Only I know that.
All right. Well, if you, I,
well, I'm not trying to dig up old things here. This is the holiday season. I'm not trying to make people feel bad.
He's not bitter.
It's good that you're not dwelling on it. Yeah. It's good that you've moved on. All right. Well, I was going to make some sort of a pie, or as Cartman would say, a pie for tomorrow. But it remains to be seen. We're not going to. The problem is that we don't really have right now the space that we used to have. That's the thing. When we were at Fisher. I mean, and we talk about this a lot, but man, those were golden times. And by golden, I mean completely unsupervised and
anarchic. Well, they left us alone on an entire floor of a building and forgot about us.
Well, that's the thing is, it's right, if you guys know where the KUFO building is, we were right next door to that big building that looks like a cheese grater.
And the rent was something like $15,000 a month.
It was, well, because here's the thing is, because see, this is, now, Kristen Bowen, you are how old, if I can ask?
I'm 23.
Have you ever worked at a radio station other than this, than CBS?
Yeah, I interned at Intercom in the very beginning.
Is it that building ago. They had down by the river?
Yeah.
The one that they're holding on to, even though they've been
like
evicted?
Oh, that's like a ball. Yes.
You know, what's really funny, my orthodontist cousin owns that building.
Yeah, well, he apparently raised the rent beyond what they were willing to pay down there, so it's a lot of cardboard boxes in that building. Yeah, but we were in this big cheese grater looking building, and we had, I mean, it's the kind of situation that never exists in radio anymore, because everything's been consolidated. These huge companies that own everything, which is neither good nor bad, it just sort of is. But Fisher Broadcasting was this tiny little company, relatively speaking, and it was just us and, you know, and JJ, which is our sister station, and we occupied, it was us and the salespeople and the management, and we had this massive, the whole second floor was just us. And then when Intercom came and bought us, they moved everybody but the air staff out, and of course the air staff was, I mean, all told, there was like 10 people, and we were there for like a year, and the entire building was empty. I mean, there was no one there, it was deserted, and so all of us had, there was like, whatever, the 9 or 10 of us there had the entire run of the building. So the first thing I did was just to move all my crap into the general manager's office, and that just became my office. I didn't even get any work done. I would just sit in there and put my feet up on the desk and just stare idly out the window and, you know, look good.
The river?
No, I was like just looking out on some crap, but still.
You look at more traffic than most offices.
It was fantastic.
Dude, especially you could deep fry turkeys and blow up spam.
That's exactly what I'm saying. And so I think back to the stuff that we were able to get away with in the last 6 months or whatever that we were in that Fisher building. Yeah, we had that huge...
Flaming baton twirling. Remember that? I still have that on video.
I do. We did the obligatory deep frying of a turkey where Matt and his big redneck mobile, he was up there with it, that huge, whatever, that thing that the...
We had a whole parking lot to ourselves.
And there was, yeah, and there was that 4th of July broadcast we did from the parking lot where Rob was there literally, juggling, twirling batons of fire.
Yeah, it was great.
We had a bunch of batons that were literally they were flaming, and he's throwing them in the air, and there's listeners gathered everywhere. And
maybe that's why they don't leave air staff in a building by themselves.
And you're right, and then I forgot about the spam. We had this fixation with blowing things up in the parking lot. So we took a bunch of spam and we rigged it with, somebody had found a quarter stick of dynamite somewhere, and so we're lighting up. I mean, it really is insane when you think about it. What are you doing? We're lighting up dynamite in the parking lot, you know? Do you have a problem with it? No. Park the station vehicle right there so it can be in the shot. I mean, they had no problem with it whatsoever.
We have big cookouts, people bringing barbecue grills and drinking.
If you could get away with that, that'd be fantastic.
That's not really going to happen. So,
I mean, it was like a real block party.
It really was.
It wasn't just a mission statement. We had huge block parties. But we would take over entire parking lots and nobody would care.
So that's not really...
It didn't go through a legal department.
there was no one there to approve or deny anything.
Oh, he was shooting guns?
That's what was fantastic about it. Yeah, boy, I've got that on tape, too. You missed that. You missed the machine gun, the firing festival we had, too.
I've never even shot a gun.
Oh, they were... See? Now, just a couple years ago, right there, you'd be triggering an entire bit for the radio program that we would milk for weeks. All right. Well, we're behind. We got a break here in a second. All right. So where are we at push-up wise? That is to say, where am I at?
60, good sir.
At 60 even?
Yeah. It's a nice even number at least.
All right. Well, there you go. So we'll check in with Mailman Chris at the end of the program and see where we are with that. All right. And we will. And I'll see you tomorrow with the Burger Kick.
Absolutely.
Excellent. Aaron Geek in the city. Thank you, sir.
All right.
There you go. That's Aaron. It's 503-733-2970. Let's take a break here. We'll come back. We got the CNN radio correspondent Ed McCarthy around the corner.
the hell else do we have coming up? CNN radio correspondent Jim Roop is going to join us. Dennis Pitzenberger will be stepping in later on as well. And Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth. Stay there. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. Don't go anywhere. It's 503-733-2970. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. Don't mind me. I'm just finishing my coffee. All right. There we go. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. Rick at rickemerson.com. Just a skosh here, as our Asian friends say. We'll talk to a CNN radio correspondent. Ed McCarthy, and so forth. Ladies and gentlemen, let me now welcome to the Rick Emerson Show.
K-O-T-K!
Good God, that's loud. Our friend, former godlike program director of the Rick Emerson Show, Bruce Ackler. Hello, sir.
Good morning. I just wanted to remind you, you didn't have to wait until Entercom cleared the building out to do almost all those things you mentioned we did while we were, while Fisher was running the place. The enlightened management of Fisher.
Oh, no, that's it. I'm,
enabled
I'm,
you. I mean, within 2 weeks of the beginning of the show, you recall what we did?
We were firing machine guns.
That's right, the Tim Riley gun fest.
No, I'm not saying it was just because of the absence. I mean, Fisher did have a decidedly laissez-faire policy towards how we amused ourselves in that building. I'm just saying that whatever minor restrictions there might have been on our behavior, those suddenly vanished as soon as the intercom, because you weren't necessarily there for the aftermath, but as you recall, you know, we were all on the one floor. Intercom comes in, they decide who they're going to keep and who they're not, and then all of the management and all of the salespeople get picked up and immediately moved down to that intercom building on the river, and they just leave all the on-air people behind. But there was only like nine of us.
Yeah, what a great idea! Leave you and Mike Chase and so on to run a place.
Although it was like Lord of the Flies. I mean, it was alternately great and terrible. I mean, I'm surprised that building wasn't burnt to the ground by the time that they finally moved us on out of there.
Of course, imagine how different life might have been if we had been located with. You forgot to mention we had one other sister station when we were owned by Fisher. That's K2 Channel 2.
Oh, yeah.
Imagine if we'd have been over there, how well we would have gotten away with fireworks and baking corn turkeys and stuff.
They were not big fans of
ours.
Oh,
they were a little rough over there. There's something wrong with your microphone today. You sound like you're sitting out in the hall. Everybody else sounds fine.
Is it, can you, as Barry Manilow would say, can you sweeten my microphone? All right, there we go. I was getting a little ambient noise.
Yeah, well, it just sounded like, you say, it sounded like you were outside and everybody else was in. So another big Thanksgiving show coming up tomorrow. I remember we started that tradition again with the very first year. I think we baked the, well, you did. I went to the coast, but you baked the tofurkey.
Well, we had that tofurkey. That was sort of the thing which initially started as a joke because first of all, I didn't think it was a real product. I didn't think it was actually a thing that really existed. And then I found that it was not only a real product, but it was actually an Oregon product.
That's
as
right.
Well.
That's right. Made an Oregon product.
See, but here's the thing about that tofurkey. Tofurkey is the reason why everybody, and Kristen is laughing, but tofurkey is the reason why so many people dabble in eating healthily and then they go back to just injecting themselves with glutinous fat all day, because that tofurkey is not unlike eating a plunger. It really is. Eating tofurkey is like eating really, really terrible flavorless calamari. You know what I mean? It's sort of like all the rubbery texture, none of the actual flavor.
I always love your description of the drumsticks.
And that's the other thing, man. It's like, wasn't, so you get like the big tofurkey loaf. It was bad enough. And I mean, loaf is a funny word anyway, but it's just got this weird, it really is like you're chewing on one of those wacky wall walker toys. It's from like 1986. And then they've got the tofurkey drumsticks, which is weird. And then this is the worst, just the most hideous final touch was the tofurkey giblets. And I mean, first of all, and let me just say this right now, I don't know what giblets are. I don't really understand what they are. I don't know. What part of a turkey is that? A giblet?
Giblets are the guts, you know, the liver and the
polite way of saying innards.
The innards, the guts.
Yeah, the guts, you know.
Why would, I mean, in what possible...
The gizzard and the heart and all those pieces. They call those the giblets.
I always thought a gizzard was a slang term for something. I didn't think a gizzard was an actual part of your body. I thought you...
Well, it's not a part of your body, but it's a part of a chicken's and turkey's body, poultry's body.
In what... But I mean... Are there people out there that really salivate at the idea of a bag of guts? I mean, is that the... No, save the guts for me.
Oh,
I mean,
some people love them.
Damn, all right.
Especially the gizzards. I mean, those are real popular, like, fast food joints in the South.
Especially the gizzard. Why would you... The phrase, especially the gizzard, has never been uttered before anywhere in this world. That's like, be sure to save the neck for me, Clark. I mean, it's just a whole lot of... I think you can judge a person by whether or not they...
Like whether they like gizzards or not?
Yeah, seriously. Yeah, really, whether they're, you know, whether they're really, you know, it's like somebody really having a hankering for pickled pig's feet or something. I mean, those are, you got to keep an eye on those people. So, all right. Well, tomorrow we'll have corn. I'm going to bring some of that in because it's fantastic.
I hear that's pretty good, right?
The corn is, I'm going to tell you this right now. I give you the Pepsi challenge on that. If I put some corn on a plate and some turkey on a plate, you cannot tell the difference.
Is that better than the deep-fried turkey?
It's fantastic. Well, the deep-fried turkey is fine, but I suspect that CBS, I suspect that CBS Legal and HR would probably they would be against that, as they say.
Well, it might be tough at your current location. If you could go over to the First Avenue building, you could probably do it there.
Yes, because that building they haven't. I'm just.
Well, they have a big parking lot and so on there.
I think the level of immaturity in that building is already dangerously high without me contributing to it. So
the coin tower might be a little rough in the lobby of the million-dollar condos there. They might not appreciate it.
The only good thing about that is the lobby here is made of solid marble, so I think it'd be almost impossible to burn down. We could give it a good scorching. That'd be about it. All right. Bruce Agler, ladies and gentlemen, former godlike program director of this very fine radio show. Thank you, sir. Have a good Thanksgiving, Bruce.
Thank you very much.
All right, there. That's Bruce Agler. K-O-T-K. All right. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show, live from the South, our good friend, CNN radio correspondent, Ed McCarthy. Hello, sir.
Rick, how are you?
Brother, I am I'm rolling. How's your life?
Good.
How are things in the South? They don't have you actually standing in an airport somewhere, do they?
Today I was at the airport, and, trying to check and see how many people were actually flying or just standing around.
Do you feel like you don't really need to do this story anymore? Like, you can just sit on your coffee table and read the copy you wrote last year, and the people in Atlanta probably won't know the difference?
Yeah, you wonder if the copy you wrote last year is right, though, because you're getting these... numbers from, you know, remember we talked this about a long time ago. We talked about where do these people come up with these numbers?
Right.
Like how many people are going to be traveling? They came up with 5 million. 5 million are going to be traveling by air. Today I noticed that it wasn't that busy. So did people take all their flights yesterday or more people driving today? That's what I wanted to
know. Man, I got to tell you, and we were talking about this a little bit yesterday, we are going to have some sort of self-imposed moratorium on me bitching out about airport security because it's become a thing that I can no longer control. Every time I have to go anywhere, it's like if I even have to drive, I had to drop my wife off at the airport today because she's flying to Provo, Utah, because it's the fun capital of the world. So I'm dropping my wife off at the airport this morning, and I swear to God, it's like driving by a rendering plant. And what I mean by that is this. You drive by a rendering plant, and I don't care whether you go in. I don't care whether you're on the killing and cutting floor or not. You go home, and you smell of dead pig. Well, here's the thing. I drive by the, and I know this is a strange analogy, but I drive by the airport. I don't even have to go in anymore. All I have to do is see that the airport is there, and I start to seethe about airline security. Doesn't even matter whether I'm traveling or not. Sarah's flying today, and that's enough to make me angry about it. So I'm going to... We're going to have some moratorium on me complaining about it, but I do really believe, I had some friends of mine that just got married about a month and a half ago, and they traveled to Southern California for their honeymoon, and they actually did it by train. And I know that adds like 2 days onto your trip, but I got to tell you, man, there's like no security, there's no pat-down, no guy...
They really have no security.
No, they don't even care. People on the train die. Go ahead, be blown up. They don't even care. I mean, it's apparently they only care if you're blown up if you're on an airplane. I asked my friend Aaron, I'm like, so do they pack you down? He's like, no, it's like we took on, they went on like loaded down with big, like, you know, with big bottles of wine and everything. Just like no guy patting your junk looking for a bomb or whatever. You just throw your crap on the train and take a snooze and that's it, man.
No guideline whatsoever.
No, so from now on, I'm going to take a train whenever I'm making this solemn vow that unless there is no other way to get somewhere, I am not going to fly anymore. It's just I have reached my... And it doesn't help, by the way, the fact that... Here's the thing. I don't know when the last time you had to wait in line at some place like the Department of Motor Vehicles is, and I know they're an easy target, but here's the problem, Ed McCarthy, and I know that I've taken over your segment by just kvetching about a whole bunch of crap that has nothing to do with your topic, but I've got to get this out.
All right, that's okay.
Here's the thing. When you're waiting in line at the Department of Motor Vehicles, there is nothing worse It's what I call the weak father syndrome, which is the person who is in a position of authority over you, but you just know that it's like, man, they got a brain the size of a kidney bean. Do you know what I mean? You give a little man a little power, and suddenly they think they're powerful. Just having a puny brain that holds some sway over your life is just the most infuriating feeling in the world. And if I had the idea that the guy at the airport could even find his ass with two hands on a map, that'd be fine. I wouldn't mind him rummaging through my luggage. Guy has no idea. That's some guy flunked out of McDonald's clown college, and that's how he ended up at the airport. Look, and you know, because they probably go through all of your CNN radio equipment, right?
Yeah, they tape. I went down for the race. I flew back Monday, and they actually strapped this thing with tape around about five or six times. TSA inspected, and I mean, I really, honest to God, I thought I was going to need a welding torch to get it, to get the case open, to get the gear out, so I could hook it up to do my broadcast.
You know, and here's the thing, and this is how frustrated it's made me, because I know not to lock the suitcase, because you know, if you lock the suitcase, especially with a lock that they sell those locks at the airport, and this is what we call no matter how much I may be ranting, this is a relatable topic, because any number of people in the audience have had to deal with this. If you lock your suitcase, you got to get one of those locks that says like TSA approved, which means that they have a secret backdoor key to it, and that's always a good feeling, by the way, that the government's going to have a secret key that'll allow them to open any of your personal possessions. And so I don't bother to lock my luggage because I figure, you know, whatever. If it gets lost, I've never seen it again anyway. But my wife is doing that thing this morning that, and I think it is a female trait, where the suitcase is packed like about 2 feet above the actual like edge of the container, and we're having to do that stupid like sitcom thing where she's literally like standing on the suitcase. And when the time I finally get it zipped shut, the pressure inside is about 9,000 pounds per square inch. So the first guy who tries to open that, it's going to be like a can full of luggage snakes. You know what I mean? It's just going to jump right out.
That springs out. So maybe, what are they going to see?
It's what? Oh, it's going to take off the guy's head. And the best part about it is that the actual little handle things on the zipper have broken off at some point. So, you know, there's that little metal tab that sticks out under the zipper that lets you zip it. That falls into the category of things whose functionality you do not appreciate until they are gone. Because here I am with the tips of my fingers trying to pull two zippers together on a suitcase that is dangerously overloaded, like a Volkswagen full of clowns, with no tab attached to the zipper. Just try to close. What made it all worthwhile was the idea that there's some minimum wage pinhead for the TSA that's going to have to go through that same struggle at the airport. He's going to have to get a pair of needle nose pliers to get that suitcase open and shut. So that puts a smile on my face.
You're the guy that keeps the dirty underwear up top too, aren't you?
Can I just tell you this? I have made a long list in my head of totally legal, non-violating things that I can do just to make life difficult for the people who search all your crap at the airport. I've thought about putting, just all kinds of rank soiled clothing at the top. Maybe 5, 10, 15, 20 marital aids packed right at the top of my luggage that they got to go through.
That makes me proud. Because these $9 or $10 an hour workers are sitting there and, you know, they're just getting off by bugging you.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. I mean, the idea of walking through in a big trench coat bulging with 15 or 30 vibrators that I then have to put through on that conveyor belt one at a time, you know, and just keeping like a long, unbroken stare on the guy the whole time as I do it. And then maybe scratching my groin every now and again. Just whatever I can do to make that guy uncomfortable. I'm sorry.
The guy that was the most miserable was when we flew back after Katrina.
Oh, man. I'm sorry that you're bearing the brunt of my anger today. The whole thing just infuriates me.
Quite all right, because I agree with you. And, you know, I really didn't have a bad flight this time. But when they taped that thing up, I said, okay, I'm going to put five or six more of these inspection tags inside and just leave them there.
Yeah.
And that's what I do. They just keep piling up.
Well, how is
Look
it?
At it.
How is it that Hartsfield International is the? Because that it says here that there's the airport you're at in Atlanta is the nation's busiest airport, but I just would have assumed that it was like LAX or JFK or something.
Yeah, well, they flip back and forth between Chicago and whatever, and you know, it's like they say they have more passengers. O'Hare says they have more planes. Whatever it is, I think they kind of overreacted this year and gave a lot of big numbers and. people panicked, and they got there so early that they were saying, well, why did we get here so early? There's not that many people here.
That's the other
thing,
too.
That's exactly what I found today.
That's it, because it used to be that everybody would show up like 5 minutes before the plane took off, and now it's gone exactly the opposite way, where everybody, I mean, it's like, my wife, the plane took off at, whatever, the plane's taken off at 9, she's like, I better be there at 6 a.m. Like, you just sort of know at this point that you got to overcompensate for it, so...
Yeah, then they panic. They say, oh, you know, all the parking spaces are gone. They're just about gone. And I think it's just somehow it's a ploy. Somebody tells it, well, you know, it's not that they're misreporting it. It's they're reporting what they're told.
Yeah.
No, and then they get down there today, and they're handing out the little baggies today, the plastic bag, the TSA. So there's your government tax money at its best for a Ziploc.
Yeah, it's America's final shield against terrorism, cellophane. There you go. I'm gonna sleep more sound. The best part of this, then I'll let you go here, but the very best airplane story is that this is not the last time I flew, but like 2-3 trips ago. I'm there in the airport, and you're sitting there in the lounge, just staring blankly off into space, realizing you've forgotten to bring your Walkman again. And just, you know, the time is just flowing by with excruciating slowness. And there's a kid across from me, I don't know, he's like probably 20, 21, 22. He's got a duffel bag, and he does that thing that I guess you're never supposed to do, but that you don't really think of, which is he gets up to go to the bathroom, leaves his duffel bag behind. And man, that poor kid wasn't gone like 90 seconds, and suddenly from out of nowhere, just like they were on batarangs, suddenly all the security guys swarm in, surrounding his duffel bag. Guy comes back from taking a pee, and it's like, I know, and the best creepiest thing is, he came back, and there's a bunch of guys in like with badges and like black jackets standing around his bag. He comes back, and he's like, what's up? And they say, is this your bag, sir? And he says, yeah. And they go, come with us. And I never saw that guy again. He never.
Oh, you're kidding.
No, he never, that guy's in a small room right now having electrodes put on his nipples or something. That guy, they just dragged him off to a room somewhere. He didn't get on the plane. He never reappeared. So.
You can't ask anybody to watch it either, because, you know, you say, hey, will you watch my bag? And people go, no, I can't do that.
Seriously, pardon me, you unknown person, would you unpack and then repack my luggage for me, please?
All
right. Ed McCarthy, big plans at your house for Thanksgiving?
Big plans. I got the Kathmeister here is all set. She's making her list here, and she's going to be doing some cooking. We're going to have some neighbors. In fact, we have a neighbor across the street. His fiance has a flight attendant, so she has to take off, so we got to do an early dinner tomorrow because she's got an international flight. So she'll be going through the madness tomorrow. She works for them, you know?
Yeah, well, I wanted to ask you this, by the way. Somebody had emailed me, and I thought you might know this. Somebody had asked me what mincemeat pie is, and they asked me, and it's one of those things that I don't really know. They asked me if mincemeat pie was actually made out of meat that has been minced, and it's one of those things that you don't think about until someone asks you.
You know, can you tell me what mincemeat pie is? Okay, I just got the answer. It's mincemeat. I don't really know what it is. Now, there's a veteran of cooking.
See?
But she doesn't make mincemeat pies.
See, because here's the thing. There are a little sort of landmine food items in this culture where they are. It's like someone labeled them just to sort of screw with you a little bit. It's sort of like how.
Meat.
Yeah, well, it's like mincemeat, and then there's sweetbread pie, which is neither bread nor sweet. Sweetbread pie, which I believe is just like cow udder or something. So, well, anyway. So you go on that note, my friend.
Appetizing. I think I'll have that tomorrow.
On that note, enjoy your Thanksgiving meal tomorrow.
I'll have minced meat and cow's udder.
All right. Thank you for tolerating my juvenile outburst of rage and anger today.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
You as well, Ed McCarthy, ladies and gentlemen, Atlanta CNN radio correspondent. Fantastic. Mike, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, sir.
Hey, Rick. How's it going?
I'm grumpy today. I don't know why. You know what it was? It was just the fact it's not even that I'm grumpy, because it's past now. I can already sense that the cloud is lifting. It's just the knowledge that he was at an airport. Just the knowledge that airports exist is enough to make me angry anymore.
I'm right there with you, man, because we went back to Minnesota back in September, just before they passed that. Now you can bring liquids on the plane. And they told my wife that she couldn't pack her meds in her bag.
This sounds like the beginning of a great story. Leave your meds at home, and then it ends with your wife nude, running up and down the aisles with a butcher knife, screaming something in the in Klingon.
No, actually, we packed them in our check-on bag with the TSA lock.
Right.
TSA went through it. We get to Minnesota. All the meds are gone.
That's fantastic. So there's
meds. anti-nausea meds. I mean, the whole nine yards, gone.
So there's some guy who works for the TSA sitting at home listening to Dark Side of the Moon on your dime, basically.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, that's what that comes down to. All right. Fantastic. Your tax dollars at work, Mike. Thank you, sir.
Bye.
All right, there you go. That's Mike. All right. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. We should take a break here. We'll come back. We will begin the noon news hour with Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth here. Later on, we'll talk to CNN radio correspondent Jim Roop. Dennis Pitzenbugger will be here as well. We'll find out what the worst noise in the entire world is, and we will listen to this week's installment of The Week in Geek. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970. Solid State Radio.